This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk tariffs with Ross Kennedy. Let's talk spending cuts with Chip Roy. Michael Malice joins us to make fun of the media. We have such a great show coming up tonight on I'm Right. All right, before we get to tariff talk with Ross Kennedy here in just a moment, I wanted to do something we try to do every time we find out about it on the show. We honor the fallen who died during training. They are the forgotten heroes of our time. We lost a United States Marine, Mr. Sergeant Jacob M. Durham, died working with the Filipinos. It was a crash. It happens. It's a dangerous profession. The training itself is dangerous. And, you know, that young man, Sergeant Durham, gave his life for his country. No different than the guy who charges up a hill. He gave his life for his country. And so Semper Fi, my brother, in prayers for his family. Now, tariffs. We're going to be talking a lot about tariffs in the coming years, I would imagine. Trump came out, had this to say.
Reciprocal tariffs, and very simply, it's if they charge us, we charge them. That's all.
When does it go into effect, sir?
Almost immediately. But I'll be announcing the details of it, highly detailed, and it'll be great for everybody, including the other countries. But if they are charging us 130% and we're charging them nothing, it's not going to stay that way. It won't affect everybody because there's somewhere we have similar tariffs. But the ones that are taking advantage of the United States, we're going to have it's reciprocity, it's reciprocal.
I love this. What I love the most is not necessarily the tariffs themselves. I love that we're having conversations about tariffs, economies, free markets, trade, supply chains, things that Americans need to know about and need to think about more than we have in the past. Joining me now is somebody who knows a lot about such things, my friend Ross Kennedy, founder of Fortis Analysis, supply chain expert, among other things. Okay, Ross. Tariffs are nothing new. Donald Trump is very much a Teddy Roosevelt Republican type. They come, they go. Many of us were raised on pure free markets. Many love tariffs. Where does Ross Kennedy fall as far as the strategy goes?
Well, I think this continues a pattern that we've seen, you know, literally from day one of the administration, where the threat of tariffs, the imposition of them, is designed to be a way to bring our trade relationships back in balance, where historically the United States has been a massive demand driver. And so anybody that gets to do business with us, particularly countries that have free trade agreements or multilateral free trade agreements, so Mexico and Canada, obviously towards the very top of that list as regards steel and aluminum, it's really about rebalancing and kind of reweighing the scales. But the reason it works with President Trump, the reason it maybe wouldn't have worked historically, particularly with President Obama, President Biden, whoever it may be, is that they believe, and rightfully so, that President Trump is very, very, very serious about this. He has made no secret of the agenda to reshore, to the extent that reshoring, you know, maybe can't happen fast enough, to use ally shoring or friend shoring, particularly in the Western Hemisphere for a lot of these critical materials. Components, parts, electronics, chips, all of these things. And so we're seeing more of the same of that here with the steel and aluminum tariffs.
Okay, let's get into those steel and aluminum tariffs. Why, how did we allow critical materials like that to land purely in the hands of China anyway? And what are we doing?
Well, you kind of have to break them out into separate domains. Both, you know, do share the common thing of they are extremely resource intensive, particularly from an infrastructure side. a steel mill or an aluminum foundry uses a massive amount of energy. They use a massive amount of water. They use a massive amount of electricity. So when you take all of that into account, you know, and then on top of that, they're not exactly the most environmentally friendly types of manufacturing and refining operations. So with the rise of the EPA, with the rise of energy prices and overregulation and it taking 5, 6, 7 years to kind of cut through all the red tape, it's just not been as cheap or as time sensitive to be able to build or to continue to operate steel and aluminum manufacturing operations in the United States. And then you set aside the fact that a lot of the materials that you need to actually produce this can be procured pretty inexpensively, largely from countries like China or from Brazil that maybe don't have as many environmental controls on it. And so this was really kind of capitalism run amok, so to speak, in the sense of people forgot that these were critical sectors, that the arsenal of democracy that we had in World War II and the post-World War II boom was not just because we made physical things in the U.S., it's because we made the materials that made the things in the U.S. But we degraded that over time. We kind of believed that nothing was ever going to, come against the United States' ability to dictate supply and demand for a lot of these things. And so we lost that edge. And so now where we're at is that, our five biggest trade partners on steel, you have Canada, you have Mexico, you have Brazil, you have South Korea, and you have Japan. Really, Canada and Mexico have benefited substantially and the most heavily from it. But Brazil, as of right now, is our number two steel partner. And that is a country that has largely fallen under the sway of China in the last number of years. And so what we're seeing is that two of our five key partners are on the wrong side of the world, and they are absolutely essential allies. And this will fall hard on them as well. Both countries depend on steel exports as major things. But Canada and Mexico really seem to be the targets here, with Brazil as kind of a secondary target, which is the reminder that you guys have benefited enormously from this trade relationship with the U.S. And just like we've seen specifically, tariffs applied on the two, USMCA, formerly NAFTA countries, this is more of the same. But when we talk about aluminum, which is really the interesting one, it's that bauxite is the critical mineral that produces, sometimes it's called, aluminum ore is what you see it as. But when you produce, when you take bauxite and you refine it, it doesn't go straight into aluminum. It goes into an intermediate material called alumina. And then alumina is what then gets alloyed to make aluminum. But when you make alumina, something drops out in that process about 10% by weight, and that's gallium. Gallium was one of the very first two of the critical minerals that China cut off to the U.S. alongside germanium last year or the year before, I forget now. But when we were going through another round of export controls, the first thing they hit were gallium and germanium, because without gallium and germanium and then a few other things like antimony and graphene, you don't have space age electronics. You don't have bleeding edge missile systems. You don't have F-35s. You don't have the guts of what makes our defense industry so overwhelmingly powerful from a manufacturing side, because we don't make a lot of those. But aluminum in particular is critically important, not only as a building material and as a critical infrastructure material for reshoring and rebuilding the U.S., we're also losing out on all that gallium. And China has completely cornered the global market on that particular critical mineral. And really the only way to get to it cost effectively is by refining bauxite into alumina and turning alumina into aluminum.
A lot of people don't know I'm an expert on this stuff too. And if you keep heating up all that stuff, it turns into the Illuminati, just so everybody knows. Okay, Ross,
facts.
Let's talk about the, I knew you were on the same page there. The EPA is still there, Ross. The regulations, the red tape, it's all still there. My question to you is, okay, it's fine. You're going to hammer China. You want to be treated more fairly on all the stuff. That's fine. But we haven't significantly cut through the red tape, the regulation. The processes here are still just as complicated and horrible as they were before. Yeah, Donald Trump's going to trim that down, but it might have another Democrat in 4 years. It's just going to ramp it right back up. So what does this all mean for the consumer?
Well, for right now, if you're looking at having a steel frame building, for example, tariffs might make it a little bit more expensive in the short run, but we don't even know that these tariffs are actually going to have any impact yet. An awful lot of the threatened tariffs have been walked back as just the threat alone has been enough to secure some form of cooperation on other issues. So when you look at it, even on a short-term impact, I think that a lot of people have kind of already figured the game out, and they're going to sit back and they're going to wait and see a little bit. Now, in the market side, you have seen it be bullish for U.S. manufacturers. You saw Nucor and Steel Dynamics and U.S. Steel. You saw, you know, trades up big on these announcements because a lot of these companies are not going to pay the 25% additional, plus what may be looked at on countervailing duties and anti-dumping duties that could be coming down the line. So it is good for U.S. producers. A pressure campaign from the president would be pretty simple to say, guys, don't get out over your skis here. Don't immediately start charging buyers and consumers a lot more for this just because you think you can. We're going to be having some level of oversight on that. Long term, when you see the announced U.S. sovereign fund, when you see some of the other announcements or hinting at announcements as far as cutting the regulatory process and review process down to 30, 60, 90 days for multiple years, when you're starting to see very, very pro-business, pro-reshoring individuals coming in to lead these regulatory agencies, the signaling of all of that will have a mitigating impact as well. So this is really, I think, a lot of a shaping operation, so to speak, to getting the environment right, to begin reshoring and to begin building at scale again in the U.S. Time will tell. You may see a bit of price taking, if you will, from the market where they have to kind of take higher prices in the very, very short term. But over when you look out over 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, I think that you will see the net impact of this to be extremely positive.
Ross, my brother, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Come back soon.
Thank you, Jesse.
Congressman Chip Roy joins us next. We're going to talk about the spending bills that are coming. How bad is it going to be, or good? I don't know. Maybe he's got some good news for us. Before I do that, let's do this really quickly here. Do you deal with expense reports? I have expenses that come with the job. Bob handles all the accounting, all the expense reports. Now, this is a one-man operation, right? I have the expenses. She handles the reports. Still a nightmare. How do you categorize this? What about the receipts for that? You deal with that? You know there's a card, corporate card, that'll make your life so much easier if you deal with expenses? It's called RAMP. It's amazing. It essentially does it all for you and does it all instantly. How much time do you spend on all these expenses? So which category? I don't understand. Let RAMP just do it for you. They'll just do it for you and make your life easy. I mean, geez, you might be able to trim down a time at the office. Save some money. Sound like a plan? For a limited time, listeners of the show can get $250 when you join RAMP. Just go to ramp.com/Jesse. ramp.com/Jesse and go get your RAMP corporate card. I know Aubrey is doing backflips about the whole thing. Member FDIC, cards issued by Sutton Bank. Terms and conditions may apply. We'll be back.
Is funding Sesame Street a judicious use of soft power?
Well, Michael, the way you put it is the way I hope folks considering your poll today will think about it. This isn't just funding a kid show for children, millions of children in countries like Iraq. It's a show that helps teach values, helps teach public health, helps prevent kids from dying from dysentery and disease, and helps push values like collaboration, peacefulness, cooperation in a society where the alternative is ISIS, extremism, and terrorism. And to your point, it's pennies on the dollar.
I am so happy I'm not a Democrat for a variety of reasons, but today I'm extra ecstatic because now these people are forced to go on television and with a straight face defend giving $20 million for some crappy Sesame Street show in Iraq that I'm sure nobody watched. Joining me now, Congressman Chip Roy from the great state of Texas. Chip, you have to be absolutely loving this right now. Imagine having to go on television and actually defend that kind of slop. No one supports this. Nobody.
Yeah, I mean, I had to, at first I thought that was parody. I heard it and I thought that was somehow somehow a joke or something that somebody was on there trying to defend that. But that's what we're dealing with. And at least in that case, it was a Democrat. All too often, it's my Republican colleagues who, you know, unfortunately, a lot of us were offering amendments to strip these things out over the last several years. You'll remember during the speaker's debate a couple of years ago, one of the key things we fought for was the ability to offer lots of amendments, particularly amendments to cut spending. Well, we did that, and we offered amendments. For example, Eli Crane offered one to cut USAID by 50%. And unfortunately, 114 of my Republican colleagues voted against that amendment. And I'm not here to, look, we got to go beat the Democrats, and Republicans are united right now generally to do that. But you're seeing the consequence of years of the establishment that were opposing those of us trying to highlight all of these things. I offered amendments to strip UNRWA, United Nations, nonsense, sending money to the Gaza and the Palestinians and Hamas. And they were funding our enemies. So, you know, funding the United Nations generally, the World Health Organization, all things that we should be defunding. And we had trouble getting our Republican colleagues to agree. I think Elon and Doge and the president are going to start changing some minds, I hope.
Can you give me the why on that for the establishment Republicans, Chip? And this is what I mean by that. It's not hard to figure out why some filthy communist activists would get a job at USAID and go teach child trannies in the Philippines how to put a condom on. But why would establishment Republicans, what do they get out of any of this stuff? What do they get out of funding the World Health Organization? But why?
Well, there's two or three things going on. Let me give you a legitimate defense of my colleagues broadly, which is a lack of staffing in Congress relative to the executive branch. We are overwhelmed thousands to one, right? I only have about six or seven staff here that are dedicated to policy and communications. And I just lost several of them to the administration. So it's hard for us to keep up with all the stuff. And we have to go track all of this stuff while everything's incoming. But now let me give you the more cynical view, which is too many of my Republican colleagues have never met a spending program that they didn't like because they view it as a way to basically buy votes, particularly when your leadership is solely focused on so-called majority makers, that is the more moderate ends of the conference, saying, well, if we don't win those seats, then we won't have the majority. Now, let me just take you back. You remember I ran against Wendy Davis in around Austin, Texas in 2020. Well, I was pretty unabashedly, outspokenly conservative in an R+4 district, that is a marginal district. Yet I found a way to increase that majority, win, and actually outperform most of my colleagues, and I won that seat with 7-point margin, but it just took work. I didn't hide from my views. I didn't hide from my beliefs. I ran on what I call healthcare freedom. I ran on cutting programs. I gave her so many ads to run against me, and she ran them all. But you know what? Go out and convince your voters. So anyway, that's a long-winded way to say, I think my colleagues say they like to cut spending. And by the way, if I hear another Republican say that they want to, you know, talk about the phrase, we have a revenue problem instead of a spending problem, I sit in these meetings, all of my colleagues say that, yet offer no efforts to actually cut spending. Those of us that are trying to put forward efforts to cut spending, well, they go, oh, guys, we can't do that. Well, we can't touch Medicaid. We can't go touch, oh, but okay, Joe Biden expanded food stamps. We didn't support it, but now that'd be really hard to cut. Yeah, we don't like the Green New Deal, but I need my free money for my corn states. I need my free money for my oil and gas companies in Houston, whatever it is. Our guys need to just say there's no more room in the inn. You don't get any more grants. You don't get any more subsidies. We're going to stop the spending and we're going to clean up the government. But, you know, you got to have leadership. And God bless Elon and the president for providing some of that leadership right now.
Chip, real quick, handicap this spending bill that's coming. I know you're all over this thing trying to hammer out some sort of a decent bill. We rarely win. In fact, I take that back. We never win these things. Are we going to win this one?
Well, I hope so. We had a really good meeting in the White House last week, and I don't tend to be one that divulges contents of private meetings, but a lot of it's been reported. And we were doing, I think, the really hard work of trying to force the conversation about what we need to do on the tax front and the spending front. Now, you and I and most of the conservatives I know would abolish most or all of the tax code. You know, we'd go back to something. I appreciate what the president wants to do in terms of external collection with tariffs. But you need to make sure that you're not taxing people too much on the inside, right? The Internal Revenue Service and our income tax code and all the complexities of the tax code. Cut it, abolish it, get rid of it. However, every Republican I know is totally fine running on spend on tax cuts, but refuse to do any of the spending cut side. So what I'm saying is, guys, I want your tax cuts. I want to actually raise you. I'll see your $5 trillion of tax cuts, and hell, I'll give you 7 or 8. But you got to give me at least a certain amount of cuts. We believe we need to get at least $2 to $2.5 trillion of cuts over 10 years. Now, Jesse, let me be very clear about what I mean. That is only $200 billion a year out of a $7 trillion total government spend. That's what I'm asking my colleagues to give me as cuts, as a down payment on what we need to do to go forward. And a lot of them are saying, we can't do that. That's too hard. Well, and I'm telling them, guys, if you want your tax cuts, then you're going to give me your spending cuts. And you know how they respond to that? They go out to the press and they say, Chip Roy opposes tax cuts. Not true. I oppose blank check just saying, oh, I'm going to do tax cuts because I want to go buy off my voters, but I'm not going to do the hard work of spending cuts. I'm going to keep fighting that fight.
Keep after him, Congressman. Thank you for what you do.
Thanks, Jesse. God bless.
We got Michael Malice coming up next. Before we talk to Michael, let's talk about getting you a good night's sleep, huh? Every night. Good night's sleep is not an option. You need to be sleeping 7-8 hours a night, every single night. And that's where Dream Powder from Beam can step in and really save you. Because there's all that. You can go get a prescription for something. You don't even need a prescription. You walk in the pharmacy and this will put you to sleep and that'll put you to sleep. And every single one of those things has you feeling like garbage the next day. Tired, groggy, like you didn't sleep at all. What was the point of taking it? Not Dream Powder from Beam. Dream Powder from Beam has you feeling like $1 million because it's natural. It's a cup of hot chocolate, delicious hot chocolate, I should point out, but it's got all kinds of things in it that'll put you fast asleep. And then when you wake up, you don't feel heavy and groggy. You feel good. Up to 40% off at shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
They can just enforce it by themselves. Do you agree with that?
I don't know even what you're talking about. Neither do you. Who are you with?
Huff Post, sir.
Who?
Huff Post.
Oh, no wonder. I thought they died. Are they still around? I haven't read that.
I miss that so much. Joining me now, somebody who loves that stuff probably more than even I do, the host of You're Welcome, my friend Michael Malice. Michael, I don't even care the subject they were talking about. I just love watching corporate journalists get bullied like losers. I think it's fantastic.
Do you know what Trump did, which was so brilliant, and what he picked up on, which I don't think a lot of people did? The guy said, your vice president suggested blah, 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 blah. So he's asking Trump to react to his interpretation of what J.D. Vance said instead of saying, your vice president said this. Do you agree? So this is how the game they play. So I could say, I go to somebody else and go, Jesse Kelly made some comments that some people have described as racially insensitive. What do you think? It's a gotcha game. It's not reacting to what you actually said. It's characterizing you in a certain way and pitting people against each other in a very disingenuous way. And I'm so glad Trump's like, go F yourself. Like he knew before he even knew who the guy was, the guy's from a disreputable organization. He wasn't even like, he's like, where are you with? Like, cause he knows even NBC or CBS doesn't do crap like this. Like, where are you from? I'm from New York. It's a very New York thing. Like, where are you from? How'd you get in here?
I have made a bunch of racially insensitive comments. It's who I am anyway. So that's fine. I think everyone accepts it at this point in time. Okay, Michael, how do these people see themselves? These filthy corporate journalist types who are worthy of so much scorn. Are they just trying to earn a paycheck? And they know he's got to ask that question. He's got to be a filthy little communist hack. Does he genuinely think he's some kind of communist revolutionary? I still can't figure these people out completely.
Well, I don't know how they look at themselves because they don't cast a reflection. But I don't think it's as simple as them just like, oh, I have to do this for the paycheck. Because if that was the case, someone else could give him more money and they could do a better job, right? So I don't think he thinks he's a communist revolutionary either. I think they think correctly, you know, I'm a random nobody with some degree from some secondary school. I'm antagonizing the president of the United States. That's a pretty good gig for someone with very few qualities that are brag-worthy. But these gotcha games are over, and they've been over, especially when you had, you know, Officer Harris as the last nominee, and she couldn't answer, you know, the difference between her right and her left. So I think things are going in a much better direction, obviously.
Michael, Trump's clearing out these agencies, well, trying to. Obviously, they're going to try to throw a monkey wrench in the gears as much as possible. But what I'm sitting there this morning and I'm reading through all these articles about the FEMA payments and the USAID and all the crap that we've all been talking about for a couple weeks, and it really hits me. I'm genuinely impressed. I hate these people, but I am so impressed how they've spent decades just taking over every institution and turning it into something that only works for them and works against us. And we've just been blissfully unaware, just kind of whistling past the graveyard as they took it all. They took the Boy Scouts and we were just doing nothing about it.
I don't think we're whistling at all. I think a lot of people were complaining about this for a very long time, and Republicans in Washington didn't do crap about it. Or what would happen is when Obama's building something, they would pitch a fit correctly. And then as soon as Trump comes in or as soon as George W. Bush came in, they just left it standing. They refused to take back what their opponents had built. And this is the first time in either of our lifetimes, Jesse, where a Republican president is putting points on the board. Instead of just playing defense, he's going on offense. And everyone listening to this knows how demoralizing it is to have things taken away. Let's suppose we walk into our house, Jesse, someone broke in and they just took, I don't know, like a loaf of bread. It's a loaf of bread, who cares? But that sense of violation, someone's been in my home, something's been taken from me, it's morally disturbing. So that is what's so great about what he's doing. He's taking the fight to them, he's going to their house, and he's taking things that they regard as sacrosanct, LBJ-level executive orders. I mean, this was not on the table in 2024. So I am giddy about what's going to happen next 4 years. And as a fan of mine pointed out, Trump lied. He said we'd get sick of winning. And that's complete BS.
It did. And I've tried to warn people that you think you're mad about USAID. And of course, we're all mad about USAID and we're enjoying watching it all get exposed. Wait till the old Pentagon audit comes through. We've seen just the tip so far. There is so much more coming. And I think it's going to be eye-popping for a lot of normies out there. Because as you said, some of us have been screaming about this for a long time. We've just never had anyone with the guts to actually do something about it.
Yeah, and I think with normies, when people are lied to, regardless of your politics, people get upset. So if you're funding things like Politico and some of these news organizations, normies who were told for years, we're independent journalists, we speak truth to power, and now you're getting millions from the government, that's obviously not being independent at all. That's being an agent of the state. That's a very different situation. And the thing is, my understanding is Trump basically re-engineered a program that Obama had built. So this is why legally they're having such issues stopping it. DOGE is not a new organization. It's a repurposing of an Obama-built organization, and they don't know what to do to stop it, and they can't. And he's really on a tear. And it's just, Jesse, not only did neither of us ever see something like this in our lifetimes, I think both of us would have agreed, if you asked us in November if something like this would happen, we'd be like, slow your roll. We could be optimistic, but come on, Washington is slow. This is not going to happen. Let's be realistic.
I think I said that verbatim. I'm pretty sure I said that verbatim on my show. Trump's going to do a lot of good things. He's going to get the border secured. Slow down on how he's going to fix all this stuff. This is not... I was king cynic on all this stuff. He's going so fast, Michael. I got to check my phone for updates during the commercial breaks of the show, because God only knows what he's attacking next of these people. It's amazing. Honestly, it was a couple weeks ago, some congresswoman introduced some bill to put Trump's face on Mount Rushmore. And I'll be honest, I completely rolled my my eyes. I read it and thought, okay, that's the dumbest freaking thing I've ever heard. If he actually eliminates the Department of Transportation, or Department of Education, actually, transportation could go too. If he actually deletes the Department of Education, you can remove the other four faces, as far as I'm concerned, just make Trump the whole Mount Rushmore.
Screw Mount Rushmore, put him on the currency.
Oh, they'd lose their minds. Put him on the $100 bill and watch all these libs burn their money.
What's even funnier is, as someone else pointed out, now every teacher has him on the wall twice with that Hall of Presidents, because he's 45 and 47. You got to look at that face twice.
Okay, Michael. The Democrat Party is in disarray, and it's not a party I want to revive at all. But parties do come back. You have pointed it out to me several times before. This is a party that has held power really for most of the time, certainly most of the 20th century in Washington, D.C. They will come back. Right now, it's hard to see how that happens. Jasmine Crockett can't get her fat mouth off the television set. They appear to be leaderless, doubling down on everything that wasn't working. Where do they go from here?
There's two ways, and one is really scary and one is really not so scary. Which one do you want to hear first?
Oh, I want to hear the not so scary. We'll finish with scary.
The not so scary is the John Fetterman route, where you work with the Republicans on issues that like a huge percentage of Americans agree on, and then you pick your battles on the things that the country has not come around to, and you find a path forward, because a lot of people for many years have voted Democrat. When Upton Sinclair ran for governor of California in 1934, after running several times as a socialist, he ran as a Democrat, and he said, people like voting for parties that the grandparents voted for. So that brand name, although it's tarnished now, is still a household name that everyone knows. So there's definitely a path to go this Clinton 90s Democrat way, in the same way the Republican Party was dead after George W. Bush, and look what ended up happening. The scary route is there's a lot of people in the Democratic Party and the Democratic intelligentsia who want us to go back to a regimented COVID-style regime. They want this. They want the cage. And going in that direction, as they're going in England, is a path forward for at least some members of the Democratic Party and some of the leaders in power. Instead of the soft glove, let's get the iron fist.
I don't think you're wrong about that at all. It's all they understand is force anyway. All right, Michael, yes. I have to let you go. Thank you, my brother. I'm out of time. Come back soon.
Great pleasure.
All right. Let's do something we never do on this show, ever. But there was a Super Bowl yesterday, and I realized you probably watched it. Shoot, I watched it. I was at a party. You know, I don't watch the NFL, but I watched the game. It was on. Let's talk a little bit about that next. Before we talk about that, let's talk about putting our money where our morals are. Where do you have your cell phone? Who's your mobile phone company? I have Pure Talk. CEO of my company fought in Vietnam, two tours. When you get a hold of someone at Pure Talk, you'll be shocked because they'll be pleasant and they speak English. Why is that? Because Pure Talk hires Americans right here in America. No more having to deal with click and some godforsaken third world dump. No, you get to talk to an American, switch your cell phone service. You don't sacrifice coverage. They're on the same 5G network and you'll pay less. I pay half of what I was paying at T-Mobile. Half. Free phones right now with qualifying plans. You realize that? PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Not a great day, I guess, for Taylor Swift. Kind of a crappy Super Bowl. I don't know. Are they all going like this now in the NFL? Joining me now, Jake Crane, Blaine Crane, and David Cohn, co-hosts of Crane & Company on The Daily Wire, which is highly, highly entertaining. Okay, so Jake, I guess I'll start with you. I haven't really watched the NFL in a few years, which makes me that weird guy at the party now who doesn't know who anyone is. But I went to the Super Bowl party yesterday, and a couple things have apparently changed. There's a white cornerback, and Patrick Mahomes sucks. What happened in the last few years since I stopped watching?
You hopped in at a crazy time. And typically, look, most Super Bowls don't go like that. You know, sometimes it's the flip of a coin. We kind of saw some of that in the college football playoff as well. But I'm going to be honest. Overall, the Super Bowl wasn't great. The halftime show was terrible. But they booed Taylor Swift and gave Trump a standing ovation. Part of me feels like America's back a little bit. So you can take some solace, Jesse, into that. Now, as far as the white corner, I mean, we talked about it on Crane & Company. I mean, it's to the point now where we're asking, could this be our version of Jackie Robinson? I don't know. We're going to find out if he's doing it. But, yeah, he's breaking barriers left and right. And we call him Haru the Great White Ninja.
All right, I gotta know before we get into the halftime show and the ads and everything else. I gotta know what was on the menu, fellas. Me personally, I was going to a party, so I smoked my world famous queso dip for 3 hours on a smoker. Mm. We all know what the hit of the party was. It wasn't the chuck. It wasn't it was mine. What'd you guys eat?
We had a lot of pizza and wings. Do you want to tell them what one fan said?
Yeah,
for the
pizza? We live streamed the Super Bowl from a cigar bar. And sometimes fans and people in the audience will send us food. Somebody decided to send us a barbecue pineapple and anchovy pizza, which is awful. And to be honest with you, I think it's how COVID started.
I mean, I only take issue with the pineapple, though.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm fine with the anchovies on the barbecue sauce.
That's not a serious saying, David. No one said
I love anchovies.
You don't
I love barbecue
yourself
sauce.
When you say
don't
that.
Put pineapple on there, though. That's where I draw a line.
Did you eat any of the anchovies?
No, I would have taken them off.
Yeah, I bet
you
would.
No, it's look, we're typically wings and pizza guys, but not with pineapple, anchovies, and barbecue sauce. That's it's just un-American.
Now I want queso, though. I'm
queso
out.
Sauce.
Now I'm hungry.
Well, you got to smoke the queso too, fellas. It's not just enough to have queso. You have to take the time, put the high-quality cheeses like Velveeta in there, and make sure you're really doing something classy. Classy,
only
like
the
I
finest,
did.
Jesse. Only the finest.
Okay, so look, you guys are young. I'm old, as you can see. I had to turn to my wife and ask, who is Kendrick Lamar? And I realized, due to the look on her face, I now know that that was a stupid question. But apparently this guy's really popular. I have nothing against rap. I'm not much of a rap man myself, but I couldn't understand a single word the guy was saying. I hate to sound like my father, but there was no melody. There was nothing to jam to. It was just... I have no idea what happened during the halftime show.
Absolute straight garbage. Imagine coming to New Orleans for the Super Bowl, the home of Lil Wayne. And yeah, it's not a hip-hop thing. You can't even get someone like Lil Wayne to come out there if you're dead set on hip-hop. Three solutions, Jesse, to fix the halftime performance. Either one, let Chris Stapleton do it every single year, because if you already love Chris Stapleton, boom, it's a win. If you don't, get ready. You're about to fall in love. Also, we don't need the theatrics, right? I don't need dancers. Don't need backup singers. Heck, he doesn't even need a guitar or really even a microphone or a stage. Just put him on the 50-yard line, sing Broken Halos a cappella, and get ready to feel something for a few minutes. Second solution is a different genre artist for everyone who wants to tune in. We can figure out the technology. If you want to listen to country music artists, you switch
Beyonce.
To the...
Yeah,
okay,
Beyonce.
We'll stop with the Beyonce. We'll talk about that later. You want to listen to Creed and rock, you know, you can flip to the one that has them as their halftime performer. Or third, we just get rid of it altogether, because elite athletes running into each other for 3 minutes should be entertaining enough.
Well, can we keep the option of Chris Stapleton and Creed? One of the two. We can pick a different one every year if you want to do that. But the thing about Kendrick Lamar is he has great songs. He's a good artist. I mean, go back to his time. The amount of hits this guy has is absolutely ridiculous.
Honey Tree's good.
You just couldn't understand what he's saying. It sounded like Joe Biden on a debate stage. And I don't even know if you had subtitles up there. They could have even done it. So at some point, Kendrick has good songs. Him and the Drake beef's kind of weird. I'll never get it. I don't want to get it. But can we at least understand what you're saying?
Yeah. Now, look, I really haven't enjoyed a halftime show since Janet Jackson, but that's another story entirely. Let's change the subject and talk about one thing I did notice, and I don't know whether this is a thing, so stop watching the friggin' NFL. There was a lot of God talk, and I loved it. Yep, Jalen Hurts talking about it, Philly's head coach, I don't know, Nick something talking about it. It seemed like a lot of players were more focused on values, on God, on good things. Is this, I realize that's always been present in sports, but I watched the post game at the party I was at. It seemed to be ramped up from what I remember. Is it?
Yeah, we're seeing it a lot more, and it's great. I just wish the NFL marketing would get behind it, because if you look at the way the NFL still markets itself, from a DEI structure, from a left-wing structure, from the pride, you know, element of this, the NFL marketing, the only reason they haven't gone the way of the NBA is because we love football so much. If it was basketball, they'd be going the way of the NBA. But it's so nice to see guys, and listen, believe in what you want to believe. I'm all for that. But having the ability to not have the fear of being able to go out and say it, I think is truly American, and you're kind of seeing a coalescing of that. And I think, you know, you're seeing the amount of guys, NFL and professional athletes, that are coming out and really saying they like Trump. And I think most guys in the NFL voted for him. But I'm all for free speech, freedom of religion, and being able to talk about it. But we're seeing this all over sports, Jesse. It's not just the NFL. You look at college basketball. You look at college football. It's really starting to become normal again. And I'm really excited.
They took in racism out of the end zone.
No, we beat it.
We're no longer racist.
No, we beat racism. They took it out of the end zone.
And also, Nick Something is a heck of a head coach. He really did.
He is. It is.
In many ways, though, I felt like we were back to my childhood. I mean, one, the sitting president showed up. And people cheered. Like, that was great. Like, first time ever. But that's something that when we were growing up, if a sitting president showed up, no matter what party, people would have cheered. Second of all, the game wasn't close. Most of the games growing up, or most of the Super Bowls when I was growing up, they weren't really close games. And then third of all, some of the commercials were funny.
Some
of them were funny, which they've set the bar so low the past couple years with no humor whatsoever. When we saw two or three that made me laugh, I said, maybe we are kind of back.
Worst Super Bowl of all time, though, right, overall?
I've seen some bad ones, man. I'm older than you.
It was bad.
Why wasn't it good? I hate to ask the question like the non-sports guy now, which apparently that's what I've become, which is really, really embarrassing. I'm basically a woman. But I thought the Kansas City Chiefs were supposed to be good. I walk into the party and all my buddies are like, ah, it's going to be a juggernaut game. They've each lost like one or two games. So why did the game suck?
Yeah, well, you know, Jesse, last year you probably could have got away with saying you're a woman. I think it's starting to change now with kind of the new team. As far as the game goes, it was surprising to us because you didn't think it was going to be a blowout either way. I wasn't going to be shocked that the Eagles won, but it was such a dominating performance at the line of scrimmage up front. And that's where the game is won and lost in football, all the way from the NFL to Friday Night Tykes, all the way through it. The Eagles didn't have to bring extra guys to add pressure. They rushed for all nights. I don't think they blitzed once when you look back at it. The Chiefs couldn't run the ball. The Eagles could. Saquon wasn't amazing, but they got enough to keep themselves balanced. It was just an overwhelming tsunami of dominance at the line of scrimmage where the game is truly won and lost. And then it started to snowball on the Chiefs, and they just ran out of time. I'm going to be honest with you, though. I think you could have played 16 quarters, and the Chiefs aren't coming back in that game.
No, they were not coming back. That was a beating from the get-go. All right, let's switch this up really quickly. Sports betting. I have nothing against it whatsoever. I've done it on a smaller scale, you know, $5 on the game with a buddy. But it's huge now. The industry itself is enormous. The DraftKings, the advertising. Where do you guys fall on sports betting?
You won $5, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you got a couple of zeros. That actually won six grand after the Super Bowl, which is a win for me. I think sports betting is only going to get bigger and bigger. It's to the point now where you don't even have to like the sport to watch it. If you bet on it, you'll watch it. I mean, I watched underwater ping pong last night because I had $15 on it.
That was a heck of a match.
It was a heck of a match. The Chinese ended up winning. That's a surprise there. But betting's only going to get bigger.
Ugh.
I mean, more. You got to think, you might have DraftKings. You might have all these big sports books, but there's a lot of sports books under them, and it's only going to expand because people want to bet money even if they don't like the sport. Hell, I went to a hockey game the other day. I don't even like watching hockey, but I bet on it, end up winning $500, so you best believe I'll go back.
Well, Jesse, we bring this point up all the time. Here's what I don't understand. Like, I'll give you, there's certain states in the South that have a lottery, but they don't allow sports betting. If you could somehow sit down and hold my hand like a five-year-old and explain to me how the lottery's not bad, but sports betting is bad, I would really love to hear that. And if you believe that, there's some beachfront property in Kansas that I've got a great deal on through a buddy of mine that we split the profits on. It just shocks me that those two things can exist and one cannot exist in the same state.
And like everything else in life, the way you engage with it in moderation, that really is the key to it.
Yeah, bet responsibly.
Yeah, obviously, you don't want to go blowing the whole family fortune there. All right, Jake, tell me about this non-woke sports show.
Yeah, man, look, again, if you're a sports fan out there and you grew up kind of in the era we did, like, this wasn't even a conversation. Like, the old school sports centers, you know, before Keith Olbermann, you know, started acting like they need to send him to Shutter Island. It's really trying to give people the sports show that they grew up with because, look, there's culture and there are times where culture and sports touch each other, and we hit these things. We talk about NIL, obviously the men and women sports thing. We did a movie, Lady Ballers, for the Daily Wire on it. Such a crazy thing. But when we do the sports show, we want to give you something that is common sense, right? You hear this all the time now. Common sense is back in play, where it's great sports analysis, We're going to tell you our opinion when it touches culture. And a lot of times it's going to be common sense, and we're not afraid to say things. But it's kind of going back in the time machine, back to when we grew up, where you watch sports to get away from all the craziness, right? Where the craziness is just the vitriol through the fans, not everybody being divided because of what they look like. And to me, that's the best part about sports is the fastball doesn't care if you're Hispanic or Asian or white. The football doesn't care if you're straight, gay, or whatever. We're just trying to give people that avenue back like we grew up and what helped us fall in love with.
Fellas, appreciate you very much. We need a sports show like that. Gosh, I miss the old Sports Center. I know. Anyway, we're not done.
Hey, I still want some of that smoked queso, though.
I'll hook you guys up with the recipe.
Yes.
We're not done. Lighten the mood.
Thanks, Jesse.
Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And every now and then you get just a little segment on CNN that puts a huge smile on your face. Sit back and relax and watch these hags on CNN have a conversation about an employee of Elon Musk who went by the online name Big Balls.
So this is a 19-year-old high school graduate who has used the unfortunate nickname Big Balls online. So that would be one way that we could refer to him. He is now working at Musk's behest inside Doge. And we looked into his background. And so we found, you know, several notable things, Aaron, one of which is that this individual has founded multiple companies, including one with another unfortunate name, Tesla.Sexy LLC, which he established in 2021. He would have been around 16 years old. Now, this LLC controls dozens of web domains.
So, Kara, you know, you hear this, and you have known Elon Musk for years. So now you look at these young men who are now in data and in the private information about maybe hundreds of millions of American citizens as young as 19, the big balls here that Katie's talking about. Most of them are in their early 20s. There's an exception I'm going to get to in a minute. I'm curious, though, Kara, how well does even Musk know these young men, do you think?
I have no idea. I think there is no vetting whatsoever. As you can see, that's taken place. It took Katie and the really great team. Wired has done an astonishing job here. You know, I could make a joke. That's probably why he was hired for all this ridiculous nonsense and other nefarious things. But, you know, there's an expression in technology. It's not a, it's a feature, not a bug. That's
good. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.